I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday. This week, there was big Bitcoin news for all you Bitcoin followers. Mt. Gox, which was one of the largest Bitcoin exchanges, it lost or was hacked out of over 700,000 Bitcoins. And at the time, that was worth about $409 million, give or take a few million, depending on what a Bitcoin is worth. How do these coins become worth so much? And are they even coins? Just what the heck is a Bitcoin anyhow? We were throwing this around our own office trying to figure out what's going on here. So we decided we'd call in an expert who knew something or a lot more. It's easy to know about Bitcoins than we do. Morgan Peck is a freelance journalist for the IEEE Spectrum magazine here in New York. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks for having me.
Do most people find this hard to get their wrap their minds around what a Bitcoin is?
Yes, I certainly did. it took me a long time.
Well, how do you? Well, explain it to me how you explained it to yourself then.
Okay. Well, I usually start at the beginning, which is to say that Bitcoin, like you said, is it a coin?
Yeah.
I tend to think that's a misnomer because what Bitcoin actually is a public ledger. It's a vast database of transactions, and that's all it is. So to say that coins exist is not really.
So when we see these pictures in magazines of little Bitcoins, they really are no such things as the coin themselves.
Nope, that's just something that somebody devised to make it more palatable for us to understand.
Right. So how do you create, then, a Bitcoin?
It's a process called mining. And actually, before we sort of describe that, we might want to back up just a little bit.
Please.
So all Bitcoin is a big public ledger, a database of transactions, and that's the only thing that exists. And
so it's like a spreadsheet.
Sure.
It's like a spreadsheet of all transactions that people are doing.
Yep, and that's the only thing that exists. And the problem is when you have something like that, it'd be fine if I was sharing that database just with you right here at this table because
right.
I trust you.
Right.
But it's spread across a network of computers, a global network of computers of people who don't trust each other. So we don't trust those people to not go back into the ledger and change the values of the coins or where they are, or where they've been spent. So you have to devise a mechanism where people can agree to what updates are being made to that ledger. And that's really the innovation of the protocol is Satoshi Nakamoto, the inventor, devised a way to create a consensus around this growing database.
Uh-huh. So it's a database of numbers. And people who own some of those numbers that act as Bitcoins? Would that be correct?
It's a database that says you, Ira, own this many, and I, Morgan, own
right.
this many.
Right.
And then when we want to spend them, we ask the network to update that ledger.
Right.
And the network, the work that's being done is to update that ledger, to do that, to scratch out our entries and change them. And you asked how Bitcoins are created. They're actually created within that process. So there's a level of participation in Bitcoin called mining. And those are the people who are rewriting this ledger. And it's computationally very difficult to do. And
they're supercomputers to do this.
In the beginning, it wasn't
yeah.
because it's an arms race. These people are competing to do it, and in competing, they've gotten more and more specialized equipment to do so. But they're rewarded for this process by getting new bitcoins, and that's how new bitcoins enter the system. Each time the ledger is updated, which happens about every 10 minutes, the person, the computer that managed to do that is rewarded with a new chunk of coins. And that's so they are simultaneously securing the network and verifying transactions, and they're the mechanism by which new coins are created.
Is there anything backing up the coins, a pile of silver or gold or anything like that?
Nope. Nothing. Just your faith.
If I had a computer and I knew how to make a coin, mine a coin, could I do one myself?
First of all, you can't do one because right now it's every time there are new ones created, it's in a bulk of 25. But if you had a really, really fancy computer, then yes, you could.
And what would give it value? What would give my bitcoins that I'm creating, I'm mining, any value?
Well, what gives anything value is the fact that somebody else is willing to pay you for them. That's how I define value. And bitcoins are based on the market. They're based on whether people will pay you for them.
And so if I wanted to buy something from you with my bitcoins, how would you decide what my bitcoins are worth to you?
Well, until this terrible debacle with Mt. Gox, they were the ones who were basically determining the market price because they're the ones that everybody looked at. And now people are looking at other exchanges and what people are willing to, you know, how much people are willing to spend on a Bitcoin. So that determines the price. So people usually look at that when they determine the value.
Our number one is 844-724-8255, 844-SciTalk, if you'd like to ask questions about Bitcoins. So what happened in this debacle? What caused the debacle and the loss of all that fortune?
First of all, we don't know where the fortune went. It's mostly rumor and speculation at this point. But
Do we know there was a fortune?
We do, because there are people who are very angry who have lost, who have clearly lost their money.
Right.
But we don't know where that went. We only know what Mt. Gox is claiming, which is that there was an attack against them, which basically amounts to a version of refund fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Someone was able to go to, what they're claiming is someone is able to go to Mt. Gox and utilize a flaw in the Bitcoin software that allowed them to make it look as though Mt. Gox hadn't given their money back, because Mt. Gox not only functions as an exchange, but they have sort of bank properties too, because if I'm giving you my money, you broker my exchange, but then I can also leave my money in Mt. Gox. And a lot of people did that. They sort of used them as a wallet service. So they're claiming that that some of these people who then asked for their money back were able to make it look as though Mt. Gox hadn't paid them, when in fact they hadn't,
when in fact they had.
And they were able to just do this over and over again because Mt. Gox had implemented an automated system to pay back their customers.
Now, if I had a Bitcoin or 25 of them, and I deposited them in your Mt. Gox or wherever they were, I would have a key to that safe deposit box that only I, even if you took my coins, only I would know how to unlock that coin, since it's a digital something, and let you use it. Or does nothing like that exist?
That's, in fact, the only thing that exists. That's the only thing that you own in Bitcoin.
So then how, if I have the key here, how did they able to steal my Bitcoin?
Well, because because Mt. Gox doesn't exactly work that way, because they don't have accounts set up for each individual client. They're holding all of this money in one big wallet. So in some ways, it's antithetical to what Bitcoin is itself. You know, the whole point of Bitcoin is that you're supposed to have sole control over your money. And probably because Mt. Gox was the only, you know, thing there in the early days, they were the ones that people trusted, and they trusted them to function in this centralized way, which is...
So in effect, I gave them the key to also.
That's right. Which is very strange, because it's completely antithetical to the way that Bitcoin works.
And it's antithetical to the internet, you know, privacy and whatever, and not trusting people.
Yeah.
And you gave your not only your coins, but the key to how to get into the box coins.
They did. They shouldn't have done that.
Stupid.
And it's surprising that they did, because that's really like the reason. That was the founding principle of Bitcoin, right?
Right.
Control over your own money.
Right.
And we don't know very much actually about why the creator made Bitcoin. But one of the things that we know, one of the things we're really sure about, is it was in response to the financial crisis and these problems that are surfacing now with Mt. Gox, which are sort of a replay of all of that. That's the one thing we know.
Are they bankrupt? They're out of business?
They just filed for bankruptcy today.
Yeah.
Whatever the Japanese form of bankruptcy is, they just did.
Does that mean everybody who has Bitcoins in there lost their Bitcoin?
It appears that way. A lot of people are really, really upset.
Now, I understand that you lived on Bitcoins for a week.
For a week.
How did that go? How did that work?
In Las Vegas, I did. Yeah.
So when you say you lived on it for a week, you're not carrying around anything with you, or your slips of paper with a number? Tell us.
Nothing. I left my cash and my credit cards at home, and all I had was I downloaded a wallet service. You can use these browser-based wallets, and you can use some that are specifically for your phone. I used one called blockchaininfo.com, or that's a wallet service that you can use on your phone, and that's the only thing I used.
So how would an exchange go? You have your something on your iPhone or whatever, and you have an app there that you're describing.
Right.
How do you use it?
In the most direct transaction, I would go to a restaurant, and there are a few in Las Vegas that have started taking Bitcoins. I would go to a restaurant, and when it was time to pay, I would put in. They have an address, which is their, you know, how they're identified on this public ledger, which is called the blockchain, by the way. And I would put their address in, and I would put a transaction request to the network. All of this is being done by the software that I'm using on my phone, and the ledger would be rewritten so that my Bitcoins would move from my address to theirs.
Did your Bitcoins change in value over time?
They did. I try not to think about it.
I guess it was not a good outcome.
Well, the trip that I took, since I was there in May, they went from $100 to $600, and then, well, they peaked at $1,200.
Buy low, sell high?
No. No, no. Not in my case.
Not in your case.
I mean, I was there to spend them anyway, you know,
right,
so whatever.
Right.
But why
would they tell me what's going on behind the scene that they're moving up and down radically like that?
They are.
Why?
Yeah.
I mean, why would your Bitcoins, I guess it's like stock in certain case.
Okay.
It changes value, the Bitcoin, just like that? While it's in your account?
Well, like we said, it's driven by the market, and you know who knows what the whims of the market are. But I mean, there are one explanation for it is that there are only ever going to be a certain amount of coins. It was created to model gold.
Okay,
that explains. Right.
Now you answered a question.
So,
if there's supply and demand, if there's only a finite number.
So every time, and basically every time Bitcoin hits the news, which it does periodically with either good or bad press, new people get into it, and there's only a certain amount of Bitcoins being created every 10 minutes. And so that supply isn't changing, but the demand is going up periodically.
I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Talking with Morgan Peck, who has freelance journalist for the IEEE Spectrum, who has had an unfortunate experience with her Bitcoin.
No. It was very fun.
It was fun.
So
everybody knows where all, if it's finite number, everybody who has Bitcoins knows where they are?
Well, where they do.
They should be.
Right. Well, they know where, but the where as represented on the ledger is not names. Mm. It's pseudonyms. So
like Swiss bank accounts.
Swiss bank accounts still have names, I think. But on the Bitcoin ledger, you, Ira Flatow, would be a string, an alphanumeric string.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's Bitcoin is also called programmable money. What does that mean? What would you do with it?
Bitcoin would be somewhat interesting if it were just, you know, a currency, just a new currency. People were upset with what we had and they wanted something completely new. But actually, what I think is the most interesting thing about it is that it adds to the functionality of money because when you do a transaction, you can actually embed a message into that.
Hmm.
So money, the transfer of money itself becomes data, and you can there are a lot of ways you can use that data and put more data into it.
Does anybody charge you for making the transaction? Is there any fee or anything like that?
So these miners can require a fee.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the fee is really low because they're incentivized by the fact that they're getting a payout of bitcoins. But over time, that payout is going to decrease. Every 4 years, the amount of bitcoins that are being created every 10 minutes halves. Mm-hmm. So it was 50 bitcoins in the beginning. Now it's 25. And that's how the minting rate of the currency is controlled. So eventually there are going to be no new bitcoins created, and at that point then the fees will probably go up, and these miners can require that in order for them to verify your right. transaction, you have to tack on a little fee there.
Why is this anything better than, let's say, like PayPal? What's the advantage mm-hmm. to something like that? You're paying a few cents every time you use PayPal, and it's a
Well,
transaction, you know?
You're paying, some people are paying more than a few yeah. cents. So that right there is a big deal. Mm-hmm. And certainly with things like Western Union, you're paying way more than
that I understand.
A few cents, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And I personally, that's one thing that really excites me about it is I used to work in kitchens and I used to work with a lot of like Central American people who would be sending half of their paychecks home, and they'd be spending tons of money on remittances, giving, you know, huge portions of their check to, you know, mm-hmm. Western Union. And that, I think that's one problem it solves. Another thing is if you look at the Target hacks that recently happened, with credit cards, you have to put all of your private information out there.
Right.
If they were using Bitcoin, they wouldn't need any of that.
How soon am I going to get it at my ATM?
Sorry?
How soon will bitcoins be available at my ATM machine?
Well, there are bitcoin ATMs already.
Yeah.
Your ATM machine, I'm not sure.
But
bitcoin ATMs actually do exist where you can do, you know, currency trades. I think one might be coming to New York soon.
Well, we'll take a look at it. Thank you, Morgan.
Sure.
Morgan Peck, freelance journalist for the IEEE Spectrum magazine here in New York.